Here's your assignment, listeners. Start up a conversation with a complete stranger on the subway, then take your middle school diary and read it on stage in front of 300 people. Sound awkward? That's precisely why you should try it. Hello and welcome to the 1-3-20 podcast, the show designed to give you the most value in the shortest amount of time. I'm your host, Daniel Pink. In each episode, I choose one great book, ask its author three key questions, and get you on your way with big ideas and action items in under 20 minutes. The 1-3-20 podcast. You're listening to this podcast because you care about learning and developing. And also, well, because HubSpot created it. If you want more great education to grow in your career, check out HubSpot's free online courses at hubspot.com/learn. Let's dive right in. Today's book is Cringeworthy, A Theory of Awkwardness. The author is Melissa Dahl. She's a senior editor at New York Magazine, and she's a co-founder of the magazine's excellent online science site, Science of Us. Melissa, welcome.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
One of the things I learned in this terrific book is to acknowledge awkwardness at the outset. So I hope it's not awkward to cut right to the chase and ask you this, Melissa. What's the big idea? What's the big idea in Cringeworthy?
Not awkward at all. So the big idea to my mind is that awkwardness is a valuable feeling, that awkwardness can be useful. It's an uncomfortable feeling. You know, you make a joke in a meeting and it goes badly, or you ask a woman when she's due and she's definitely not pregnant. Or, you know, you have an uncomfortable conversation about some kind of, you know, something that's like really touchy. We call these moments awkward, and it makes us so uncomfortable. We think it's something we need to run away from. We think it's something we need to avoid. But after studying this feeling and kind of obsessing over it for several years, I came to really truly believe that there is some value in sticking through the awkwardness, and that it can really help you improve yourself and help you improve others.
Now, you have an interesting definition of awkwardness: self-consciousness tinged with uncertainty. Expand on that a little for us.
Yeah, so there is all this really interesting research linking nervousness with self-consciousness. And I mean, this is sort of a hallmark of an awkward moment. You know, you say something and you're nervous. You know, you're in a job interview and you just start to think like, I've never thought about it before. What do I do with my hands? You know, what is my face doing? Am I sitting the right way? And so nervousness makes you more self-conscious, but self-consciousness, this literature says, also makes you more nervous. So it's just this horrible round and round and round cycle that I ended up calling the awkwardness vortex. And it sucks you down and down and down. You know, the more you think about how you're holding your hands, the more nervous you get, and the more nervous you get, the more self-conscious you get. And then there's also this underlayer of uncertainty, which is just, you know, I don't know what to say. I'm in like uncharted territory. I don't know what to do next. I don't know what to say next. So
you also write about whether awkwardness is a personality trait or an emotion. And that's an important distinction. Explain that.
Well, I think it can be both. You know, I mean, there certainly are awkward people out there who kind of bumble around and make the rest of us feel awkward. But that distinction became interesting to me because I don't know that everybody who is a, quote, awkward person, like a Michael Scott or a Larry David or something like that, to borrow from popular culture, I don't know that they necessarily feel awkward. Whereas if Michael Scott, you know, makes a bumbling bad joke that, you know, just does not come off right, the feeling kind of spreads throughout the room and the rest of us feel awkward. And so it just became more interesting to me to focus on kind of the inner version of this feeling than the outer version of it.
Right. And there is a conflict there, though. There's a conflict between the way we see ourselves and the way others see us. Is that at the heart of awkwardness?
Yes. I became really obsessed with this idea. So I did a story for Science of Us a couple of years ago about why the sound of your own voice makes you cringe. This has become such a cliche. So many people say this, you know, a lot of journalists say this, especially when we're listening back to, you know, recordings of interviews, just, oh, I hate the sound of my own voice. It makes me cringe. There's actually some really interesting physiological explanation here. The way that I typically hear my own voice is through the air and through the bones of my own skull. Mm-hmm. And bone conduction transmits sound at a lower frequency than
Here's your assignment, listeners. Start up a conversation with a complete stranger on the subway, then take your middle school diary and read it on stage in front of 300 people. Sound awkward? That's precisely why you should try it. Hello and welcome to the 1-3-20 podcast, the show designed to give you the most value in the shortest amount of time. I'm your host, Daniel Pink. In each episode, I choose one great book, ask its author three key questions, and get you on your way with big ideas and action items in under 20 minutes. The 1-3-20 podcast. You're listening to this podcast because you care about learning and developing. And also, well, because HubSpot created it. If you want more great education to grow in your career, check out HubSpot's free online courses at hubspot.com/learn. Let's dive right in. Today's book is Cringeworthy, A Theory of Awkwardness. The author is Melissa Dahl. She's a senior editor at New York Magazine, and she's a co-founder of the magazine's excellent online science site, Science of Us. Melissa, welcome.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
One of the things I learned in this terrific book is to acknowledge awkwardness at the outset. So I hope it's not awkward to cut right to the chase and ask you this, Melissa. What's the big idea? What's the big idea in Cringeworthy?
Not awkward at all. So the big idea to my mind is that awkwardness is a valuable feeling, that awkwardness can be useful. It's an uncomfortable feeling. You know, you make a joke in a meeting and it goes badly, or you ask a woman when she's due and she's definitely not pregnant. Or, you know, you have an uncomfortable conversation about some kind of, you know, something that's like really touchy. We call these moments awkward, and it makes us so uncomfortable. We think it's something we need to run away from. We think it's something we need to avoid. But after studying this feeling and kind of obsessing over it for several years, I came to really truly believe that there is some value in sticking through the awkwardness, and that it can really help you improve yourself and help you improve others.
Now, you have an interesting definition of awkwardness: self-consciousness tinged with uncertainty. Expand on that a little for us.
Yeah. So there is all this really interesting research linking nervousness with self-consciousness. And I mean, this is sort of a hallmark of an awkward moment. You know, you say something and you're nervous. You know, you're in a job interview and you just start to think like, I've never thought about it before. What do I do with my hands? You know, what is my face doing? Am I sitting the right way? And so nervousness makes you more self-conscious, but self-consciousness, this literature says, also makes you more nervous. So it's just this horrible round and round and round cycle that I ended up calling the awkwardness vortex. And it sucks you down and down and down. You know, the more you think about how you're holding your hands, the more nervous you get, and the more nervous you get, the more self-conscious you get. And then there's also this underlayer of uncertainty, which is just, you know, I don't know what to say. I'm in like uncharted territory. I don't know what to do next. I don't know what to say next. So
you also write about whether awkwardness is a personality trait or an emotion. And that's an important distinction. Explain that.
Well, I think it can be both. You know, I mean, there certainly are awkward people out there who kind of bumble around and make the rest of us feel awkward. But that distinction became interesting to me because I don't know that everybody who is a, quote, awkward person, like a Michael Scott or a Larry David or something like that, to borrow from popular culture, I don't know that they necessarily feel awkward. Hmm. Whereas if Michael Scott, you know, makes a bumbling bad joke that, you know, just does not come off right, the feeling kind of spreads throughout the room and the rest of us feel awkward. And so it just became more interesting to me to focus on kind of the inner version of this feeling than the outer version of it.
Right. And there is a conflict there, though. There's a conflict between the way we see ourselves and the way others see us. Is that at the heart of awkwardness?
Yes. I became really obsessed with this idea. So I did a story for Science of Us a couple of years ago about why the sound of your own voice makes you cringe. This has become such a cliche. So many people say this, you know, a lot of journalists say this, especially when we're listening back to, you know, recordings of interviews, just, oh, I hate the sound of my own voice. It makes me cringe. There's actually some really interesting physiological explanation here. The way that I typically hear my own voice is through the air and through the bones of my own skull. Mm-hmm. And bone conduction transmits sound at a lower frequency than the air. So that's why so many of us, when we hear recordings of our own voice, we say, oh, like I sound so much higher than I thought I did, you know. So there really is a discrepancy in the way that you're hearing yourself and the way that others are hearing you. So that's interesting. But then that made me think, well, why do we say that makes us cringe? Mm. And I think that that's kind of a working metaphor for all of these moments we call cringeworthy. It's these moments when the you you think you're presenting to the world doesn't quite match up with the you the rest of the world is seeing.
And so that's the conflict. Now, you did a few things in the book to address that conflict head on, from talking to strangers or to reading your diary. Tell us about some of those adventures. The subtitle of the book is A Theory of Awkwardness. And I think you put together, weaving together the research really elegantly about what awkwardness is and how it's in some ways an element of the human condition. But what I also like about this book, it's also adventures in awkwardness. So tell us about some of those adventures.
Yeah. So this is a feeling that has driven me nuts my whole life. So I guess I was just kind of really intrigued by people who dive headfirst into it on purpose. I came across this this show called Mortified, where people get up on stage, adults get up on stage and read from their teenage journals. And even while I was researching awkwardness, it seemed kind of like the perfect thing to explore, but I avoided it for a long time because I just thought, like, what on earth? Like, what could people possibly be getting out of it? And then I not only went and checked it out, I participated in the show myself. I read my my seventh grade diary on stage in front of like 300 strangers. And it ended up being this really, really cool experience that I was not expecting.
What was surprising about it?
What was surprising about it was when you're writing these words as a, you know, as an awkward teenager, you kind of feel so alone. But then getting up there on stage and reading it in front of people, people laugh. It's a comedy show, but they're laughing out of self-recognition. You know, they see some of themselves in you and your awkwardness as a teenager. So that means that maybe you really weren't so alone. And that's what I really came to love about this feeling. If you think about it in the right way, it's something that can kind of connect us all together.
So, Melissa, you also tried this intriguing experiment on the subway. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So there was this study that came out of the University of Chicago that was led by Nicholas Epley, who is, you know, one of my favorite researchers. And yes, I do have favorite researchers. and he did this study where he had people, as they commuted into work, he had some of them strike up a conversation with the person next to them, and some of them just kind of, like, commuted like they normally would. And, you know, he asked them to predict, like, you know, would they be happier if they had a conversation with someone next to them, or would they be happier just kind of doing what they normally do, just staring into space or staring at their iPhone, probably more likely. And not surprisingly, people thought they would be happier just sitting alone, but what he found was people were actually happier when they struck up a conversation. And I read this story and everybody reported it on it, like, just with a straight face. And I remember reading that just thinking, like, there's no way that could be true. That sounds horrible. And so I did it for a week. And it's one of the many things that kind of inspired me to write this book, that intentionally putting yourself into awkward conversations can be really worthwhile. I kind of did the story just, you know, frankly, just as a stunt, like, just thinking it was going to be horrible and then I'd write about it and I'd just, like, get to go back to my normal life. But there were these really genuine moments of connection that I found with people as I chatted with them. Like, there was a woman next to me who was reading a book I had recently read, and we had an actual real conversation about the book, and then we kind of stopped and went along, and then she got off on her stop and she turned around and said, "Bye, have a great day," which is just not something you usually get on the New York City subway.
So this is all interesting. So we're talking about this emotion of awkwardness. We all experience it. But let me put on my hard hat here for a moment and ask you the second question we always ask people, which is this: why should I care about any of this?
Our natural instinct, I think, is to avoid discomfort, to avoid uncertainty. We want to run away from these things. We like comfort. We like predictability. But if it's true, and I think it is, that these moments show us that there's a gap between the way we think we're presenting ourselves to the world and the way the world is actually seeing us, then I think these moments give us an opportunity to move a little closer toward the self that we wish we were.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it can be a form of knowing ourselves more deeply, performing at a higher level?
I think so. I really do.
Yeah. I think there's another reason, too. There's a line in there that I think is just lovely that really stuck with me. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about that, because I think it's an important part of why we should care. You write, "The ridiculous in me honors the ridiculous in you.
Yes, absolutely. It's just acknowledging that we are just a bunch of bumbling dorks out here. We're all doing our best. And just when I see these moments in somebody else, it's just like little cracks in like the armor of coolness, you know, and it's just some little bit of humanity kind of sneaks through. And there are these little moments we can connect with each other.
And so we're all bumbling dorks, we're all ridiculous, but that's part of who we are, and I guess it's a form of, as you say, it's a self-understanding, and I think it's also a form of self-compassion and compassion for others. So that's why we should care. Now, when we take this knowledge that you've compiled in this book, Cringeworthy, some really interesting academic research, some really lovely tales from the front, from your own experiences— let me go to the third question here. What should I do? All right, I know that awkwardness is a fundamental human quality. I know it has some intrinsic value, but what are some of my next steps? What should I do about this?
I'm so glad you asked. There are so many things you can do about this. So we talked about, the research linking self-consciousness and nervousness and how that kind of goes round and round. Well, these psychologists that study this, they say that if self-consciousness is part of the trigger, then focusing on anything but yourself helps. Mm-hmm. You can focus on the big picture, kind of what you want to accomplish. If you're feeling self-conscious in a job interview, then just focusing on, maybe beforehand you thought of three things that you want to, talk about what you can bring to the job or about what makes you excited about the job. Or if you're nervous at a networking event or at just a regular party or something, maybe just focusing on the person in front of you. Just anything but yourself, anything but yourself. And that can kind of help break you out of that self-consciousness vortex, that awkwardness vortex.
So shift the attention from yourself to others.
Yes.
There's also some good advice in here on what academics call, and you write about a fair bit, called the spotlight effect. Tell us about that.
Yes, I love this idea. So the spotlight effect is this idea that we assume that more people are picking up on our flaws and our embarrassing moments than they actually are. We think everybody cares. We think everybody is keeping track of all the stupid things we do. And fewer people are noticing than we think. So it's really a soothing message for extremely self-conscious people such as myself. Not as many people are caring about my awkward moments as I think.
Nobody cares as much as you. So the fact that I'm sitting here in a sweatshirt that has, and I'm not joking about this, Melissa, a sweatshirt that has like a food stain on the front, no one is noticing that. Or maybe they're noticing it, but they don't really care.
That's the thing. There's a balance between it's not that nobody notices. It's not that nobody cares. It's just not as many people as we think care. You know, if you walked into like a business meeting like that, I think people would notice. But even so, not as many people would care as we think.
And what can we do to help our nervousness? Because sometimes nervousness is a natural human emotion. It's a reaction to some kind of stressor. But there are ways to deal with that.
Yes, I love this too. This is something I have written about just, I don't know, hundreds, thousands of psychology studies over my career. Mm-hmm. And this is one of the ones that has actually stayed with me. It's so helpful. It's this idea called anxiety reappraisal. And basically, in the body, nervousness feels a lot like excitement. To your body, they kind of feel the same way. It's just, your blood is rushing, your heart is pounding. It's your body knowing that you've got to be ready for something. If you interpret it as nervousness, it means that your body is ready to, like, bolt out of there. But if you interpret it as excitement, it can be, you can kind of think about it as, okay, my body's trying to pump me up. This isn't, just to make me run away. This is trying to get me ready to perform at my best. And there's been some research that shows when people tell themselves to get excited instead of to try to calm down and tamp down those nerves, they actually perform better.
So this is the reappraisal then. You want to reframe nervousness as excitement. So when you're feeling nervous, you say, I'm not nervous, I'm just excited.
I'm so excited that you understand it, yes.
You also talk about your growing edge. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so this is kind of another way of reframing awkwardness. So if one of my kind of theories of awkwardness is that it's that gap between who you think you are and how other people are seeing you, then maybe you can use the feeling of awkwardness to help you grow a little bit, to help you improve and become that person you wish you were. So you can reframe these awkward moments as it's uncomfortable, but that doesn't necessarily mean negative. It's potentially an opportunity for growth.
Let me ask you another question here, Melissa. How has this changed your life reading about studying awkwardness? Do you feel like you're less awkward, or do you feel like you simply understand awkwardness more deeply?
I don't think the feeling has completely gone away, but now I know what to do with it. You know, one of the things that used to kind of hold me back was if I was feeling the uncertainty kind of awkwardness when needing to address something, something kind of touchy at work, for example, I would just kind of beat around the bush or just avoid the topic entirely. And now I'm much more likely to just be straightforward about it. And you don't have to, it doesn't have to be terrifying, but you can just be a little more straightforward about what's bothering you.
Good advice for any part of our lives or any people we might meet. The book is Cringeworthy, A Theory of Awkwardness. Melissa Dahl, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for the great questions.
Thanks for listening to the 1320 podcast. If you want more great education to grow in your career, check out HubSpot's free online courses at hubspot.com/learn. And if you enjoy this podcast, please rate it and review it on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you leave your ratings and reviews.